I'm Michelle. I'm an alcoholic. I'm very grateful to be here sober today and really honored to be able to speak at an international convention. That's really kind of mind-blowing. It is. And to talk about probably one of the most important things that's happened in my life, and it's the fellowship of this program. And that's what I associate the Alcoholics Society as, a fellowship, more so than a society. I guess it is, but the fellowship is what hits home to me. I'm just kind of spacing out here, guys. Let me just get my thoughts. Oh, the pressure. I don't know. Our unity is what helps us to move mountains, you know. No human power could have relieved us of our alcoholism. But we can, you know. We can change each other's lives through our higher power in this program. And that is monumental. Because there's been a lot of things that tried to change my disease, you know. And it was insurmountable, you know, a cunning, baffling, powerful disease. And it's just amazing what God has done through us, you know, that we were available and to work together to carry this message to the still suffering alcoholic. I have been on a few 12-step calls. My husband, he's recently passed away, but he was 12-step called. He came to on the floor, and there was a group of alcoholics fighting over the top of me. You know? So our society and fellowship and all of our utopia, it does carry a far message, but we are pretty human in our own way, you know? And the way we go about things is maybe a little rough around the edges compared to what a lot of normal people might do. But that's what makes me feel like I belong, you know? I've gone to places where I didn't, you know, I liked what they were doing, but I just didn't feel like I belonged there, you know. I've always, even before I took that first drink, I felt like I was on the outside looking in, you know, that I didn't quite belong there. But I belong here in this fellowship, you know. So when I first came into these meetings and got asked to do a few things, it was very foreign to me. I didn't share at meetings much. But I got to listen to your guys' higher power and your hope, and then I picked up on that, and I could relate to your stories. And that unity let me know that I wasn't alone and that there was some hope for me. Later, when I was able to overcome some fear and get a sponsor and work through things, I could bite into this fellowship thing because I was very guarded at first. But being able to watch you guys participate with each other, you know, in action, made me want what you had. It made me stick around for a little bit. It made me participate a little bit or share a little bit at meetings, and eventually it took on. But you guys were always very patient with me. My higher power was very patient with me. I had a sponsor who was maybe not so much patient. Not you. You know, my first sponsor, I would go to meetings, and I thought, ta-da, I am at a meeting, you know, and she'd say, okay, well, why don't you share while you're at that meeting? And that seemed like a real revelation, you know. But that's what's been nice about this program. It's always met up with me with where I was at, you know. There's a very interesting little crack here. No, and you know, my husband died suddenly in a motorcycle accident last August. And I have been involved in service on an area level from Wyoming. And so I knew people from all over the state. You want to talk about just getting whacked between the eyes and getting dazed. You know, that's what happened when I got the news that my husband had passed away. And this fellowship just stepped in and took over like a machine. I mean, how we do action together. Our fellowship is everything that any other church or any kind of thing would want to be. How we do things to overcome this disease and our alcoholism and how we help each other. is like a finely oiled machine. And we do it because our life depends upon it. You know, we could die alone or live together. And that's true business for us, you know. While we were at that funeral, it was a big funeral. There was people everywhere, and people from AA were running the whole thing, behind the scenes. And my uncle was there. He's a big deacon for a church, a Baptist church, and this family builds churches for other people. That's what they do. And he goes, you know, my eyes have been opened to what this fellowship is today. You know, it was everything that he would hope a church would be or a fellowship would be, is what we were. You know, we were practicing these principles in all our affairs, and it was the attraction rather than promotion that keeps us working together. And my story is just one of those smaller stories. I shared it at the assembly just to show appreciation to everybody that did show up. And there was another guy in our fellowship at Area 76 whose house had burned down, you know, and it was the same thing. The fellowship just stood together. We got together and we did what we could to help this person in AA out, and we moved mountains. Again, we did together. This disease is a bastard. It is. It doesn't care. Every time I get ready to go speak, I think about all of those souls that we've lost, I've lost in this disease. And it's brutal. And it's not prejudice, and it just doesn't care. You know, it destroys families. It's just a ruthless thing, and it doesn't care. But we can do it together. You know, and I think that's the awesome power of us together as a we, as a fellowship, and our action, and our language of the heart, and all of that. We overcome some really mean things in this world, you know, because life on life's terms is rough. But when we do it together, it's a real blessing. And I don't know if that's even close to 20 minutes, but I think I'm out of stuff. So that's all I got.
Thank you, Michelle. And now we have Srinidhi.
Hi, everyone. I'm Srinidhi. I'm an alcoholic. This is a good-looking group of people here. Very happy to be. This is my first international convention, and it's quite an honor to be participating in it in this capacity. And thank you to Kathy B. And thank you, Kathy B. I'll get you for this later. So I have a sobriety date. It's November 14th, 2006. I have a home group. It's the Into Action group in Morgantown, West Virginia. We meet on Wednesday and Thursday evenings at 8:30. We have a big book study on Wednesdays, and on Thursdays we have all kinds of different meetings on Thursdays. Usually we read from the literature. And I have never felt in my life before I got to Alcoholics Anonymous how I felt in a home group. It's a really beautiful thing. I, too, felt like I really couldn't get along in the world. My life was that puzzle with the missing puzzle piece in it that I'll just never be able to find. I'll never be able to get along with a group of people and really feel like I fit in, like they all look like they fit in. And when I joined a home group, after some stuff got cleared from my personality, my character defects, I was able to really enjoy being a part of a home group, and I felt like truly I had a family that, you know, wasn't biologically related to me, but was really related to me in the heart. There's a quote that Bill Wilson had in As Bill Sees It, and it's talking about a spiritual experience. And he said, "Is sobriety all we are to expect of a spiritual experience?" And the answer was absolutely not. You know, we get a new life, a new way of life. And I thank God for the women who 12-stepped me when I first got to AA and gave me the opportunity for this new life. And I'll tell you, my first experience with Alcoholics Anonymous was when I was 18. I had gotten into a little trouble for my drinky-poo problem. I went off to college in New Orleans, and, you know, who's gonna go to class, right? And who's gonna go to the library on Monday night? And instead, I got arrested. And through the powers greater than myself in the New Orleans Police Department and the University Police Department, I was asked to go to substance abuse counseling and a little treatment program. And in the treatment program, they asked me to go to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I had my walls up. I literally had walls up. I had human walls around me. I brought all of my friends with me who were still my friends, my drinking friends, to the first meeting that I went to. It was in a synagogue, and it was a young people's meeting. And when everybody held hands and said the Lord's Prayer, I was like, this is a Christian cult. And the synagogue's just a front. I had my earmuffs on. I wasn't listening to what anybody was saying. And for 8 months after that, I just held on to the side of my seat and said, I'm not going to drink today. 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 Screw you, you're drinking. I'm not going to drink today. And, like, just angry at the world. And so that was my first experience with this Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was in complete judgment, and, you know, you people needed God, and I don't need God because I'm too smart for that. And so, you know, if God and the creepiness of this fellowship scared me out, alcohol brought me back to it, because within a year, I had truly hit bottom. I felt like I was at what people call the jumping off place. I really wished for the end. You know, I was living in a on-campus FEMA trailer in New Orleans. I had black construction paper all over the windows because I didn't want to see the sunlight. I didn't talk to people before the sun set, and I was just living to drink and to feel that feeling of ease and comfort that alcohol and other things brought me. And so when I hit that bottom, I guess I was granted some power and some clarity and some open-mindedness to go back to Alcoholics Anonymous and really experience what you guys have to offer. And it really wasn't any virtue on my own, but I don't know. I think some power entered my life and gave me the opportunity to do this. And I remembered, you know, as creepy as the fellowship was, people were happy, you know, and people got along with each other, and there was real power there. And so I thank my family for bringing me back home where I was from in Savannah, Georgia. That's where I got sober this time. And walked into that clubhouse, and I still had the walls up. I walked in the 24-hour club on Eisenhower Drive in Savannah, Georgia, through the side entrance, and there was a partition room divider that was not being used anymore, that was pushed up against the wall, but it wasn't flush to the wall. And so I would make sure to sit behind that partition divider. I actually had my parents with me for the first week, so they were my human wall at my meetings in Savannah. I don't know what it was, but you know, I just had that right cocktail, so to speak, of spirituality around me that something attracted me to doing the steps. And also I got tricked into getting a sponsor, and she tricked me into working the steps. But, you know, I could have just hit out. So a man that they called Duckman assigned me my first sponsor, and she got me reading the big book and got me working the steps, and that was my first experience with true sponsorship. You know, we met and she devoted her time to me, and she took the time to explain things to me that were foreign. You know, I didn't know what the goose hung high meant and boiled as an owl meant, and she took the time to, you know, tell me what the stuff in the big book means. And I really could see that I like big book studies, and I like to listen to this big book study where they talk about the difference between the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous and the Fellowship of the Spirit that we have. You know, the fellowship is all the bodies in the room, and the Fellowship of the Spirit are the people that are the league of the spiritually enlightened. I like to think of them, you know, the people who are the Society of Alcoholics in Action, the people taking the steps and the people carrying the message and the people doing the service work that makes it possible for that message to be carried. And through being sponsored and starting to sponsor, I really got to experience the fellowship of the Spirit, and that is a whole new beast than just sitting in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, holding onto the side of my chair saying, I'm not going to drink today. You know, I got to see the people getting together and lifting people up when they were down, and getting together and, you know, doing 12-step work and doing 12-step calls. And then my first few area assemblies in Area 16 were really, truly incredible. You know, seeing all these, like, shiny-looking people with their suits on and their dress clothes, and they're getting up to microphones and they're confident and they're talking about, you know, things they're passionate about in Alcoholics Anonymous, and you know, making sure that there's literature for people and making sure that there's money in our baskets that, that can go to all of the services that our fellowship does. So that was really nice. So I got involved with a home group, and a couple months sober, my sponsor tricked me into becoming the alternate secretary of our home group. And I got to be one of those, you know, got to experience being one of those shiny people, taking minutes and being present and being accountable. I had been called flaky, and I don't know why. You know, it's like I was called selfish, and I didn't really know why, but I was called flaky, and I didn't know why. And through getting involved in group service, I got to practice not being flaky. It's a great experience. Around a year or so sober, a lot of young people in Savannah were getting together to host a young people's conference. And I didn't want to do it because young people scare me. I remember when I first got sober, I used to hang out with the old guys in my home group and go to Spanky's and get, you know, chicken fingers after the meeting. And my mom's like, are you going to always be hanging out with 50-year-old men? The young people really scared me because the old people, you know, they were crusty and they had life experience and they were funny. But young people, I felt like I always had to be someone different around, probably part of my spiritual malady that I have. But around this time, a year sober, people were rallying to host the Georgia Conference by Young People in AA in Savannah. And so they started a bid committee and started hosting events. And I got to see that young people are really fun and funny, and I can be myself around young people. I got involved with that host committee. And one really great thing that came out of that was I got a service sponsor, Lucille S. in Savannah, Georgia. And she took me through the 12 traditions and the 12 concepts of world service, because Scott B. over there announced at a meeting one day his sponsor was doing a concepts talk, and I'm kind of an academic, so his sponsor was doing a concepts talk, or someone in his sponsorship lineage, and he announced that, you know, if you think there are just 12 principles in the steps and 12 principles in the traditions, there's 12 other principles in the concepts, and I was like, I want to learn those. So I actually, David S. was giving the concepts talk, and Lucille S., his wife, I asked to become my service sponsor. I was like, yeah, these old married couples in AA know about the traditions and the concepts, so I can get their wisdom. So I got a service sponsor and learned about these, you know, 36 wonderful principles that we have. So after we hosted Gikipa, which was really great, looking out in the room on Saturday night and seeing, you know, the stuff that we had done to make this possible. So we hosted at the Holiday Inn in Savannah, Georgia, and attached to the Holiday Inn was something called Doubles Nightclub. It's a really swank place to drink. On our Saturday meeting, someone wandered in from Doubles Nightclub and said, y'all look like you're having a little bit more fun than I am, and was the person in the sobriety countdown to get a big book, right? I'm looking at you, Joey. He picked up the big book on the sobriety countdown? Okay, well, it would be a beautiful lie if that's the case. But so someone wandered in from the nightclub and had a good time. After we hosted Gikipa, we rolled on to a lot from our host committee, rolled on to the advisory committee for Georgia Conference by Young People in AA, and I had the opportunity to serve on that for just a little bit of time. But like I said, I'm an academic, and I had to figure out what I wanted to do with my life, and so I moved to go to graduate school to Statesboro, Georgia. And in Statesboro, Georgia, they just don't do it like they do in Savannah. They do it well, but you know how you get sober in one place and then you go somewhere else and it's just not the same. And the big book does talk about, you know, if we're not feeling it, we need to create the fellowship that we crave. So I wasn't feeling it, so I sat in my not feeling it for a little while. And then someone nicely reminded me about creating the fellowship that you crave. Really what blocks me when I'm around the fellowship and I'm not feeling like I'm a part of this society is myself and my character defects and my unwillingness to do the work and to take the action that this society of Alcoholics in Action is taking. And in Statesboro, I joined a home group and got involved in group service and got involved in district service and helped start a home group, and really it started to feel like home. You know, it's really a matter of me feeling like I belong in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's really a matter of me getting involved in Alcoholics Anonymous with me doing the work. So I hung out in Statesboro, and one thing that I really liked to do there is I saw a lot of women going to halfway houses and hanging out. And so I'd go to halfway houses and hang out. And then I saw a lot of women going to jails, bringing a meeting into a jail. So I went and helped bring the meeting into the jail. And those are some other services that district puts in place that are just really amazing. But a couple years later, I had to move again. And we moved 700 miles away to Morgantown, West Virginia, Area 73. And I was really busy this time, you know, like that last grad school was easy. This grad school now is not very easy. And I got really busy. And a friend of mine talks about how the longer you're in AA and the more you do this work, the bigger your life gets. So this little person that lived in the FEMA trailer with the black construction paper is now in a very big world. And I have a lot to do and I have a lot on my plate. And when life gets bigger, one of the old ideas that I had is that I'm just, you know, I only have enough energy to do what I'm supposed to be doing right now. You know, I'm really busy. I'm supposed to be doing school. But I got involved with my home group and went to the area assembly. And at the area assembly, I got peer pressured into standing for recording secretary of Area 73 by my sponsor and some other really amazing women. But really, the whole time I was thinking, no, it was an open position and people weren't willing to stand for it. And I've been told that if there's something open and people aren't willing to stand for it, then you should do it. And, you know, I heard my higher power telling me that you should probably raise your hand. And so, meanwhile, I'm not really the Area 73 convention that I went to before. I really was like, I don't really belong here. Nobody likes me. Because I expect another old idea I have is I need to sit down and people will come to me and talk to me. And so I was like, oh, nobody likes me. And then after getting involved in area service, I really felt like that was my convention that I went to last month. It was really amazing. Another thing I wanted to share really quickly is that our experience seeing this Fellowship of Alcoholics in Action, especially with the young people in Georgia, helped us to get together a group of young people in West Virginia to start with the first annual WVCPA, the West Virginia Conference by Young People in AA, which will be in Morgantown, West Virginia on Halloween weekend. So if you're bored on Halloween weekend, come up to the hills and we'll show you a good time. We've got a group of people from all over the state. We're the most active home group in the state, I think, and we're not even a home group. We meet every month and we put on events, and it's been really great. It's kind of a rural state, and so getting people from all over the state is really amazing. So I'm really moved. I really like the history of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I have gotten involved a little bit tinkering around with archives in our district. But one of the, I think it's in the book Spiritual Experience. I didn't find it because I tried not to prepare too much for this. But there's a story about the links in the chain of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm overwhelmed thinking about that this weekend, is that, you know, some rich guy named Roland Hazard went to Switzerland and talked to some really fancy doctor in Switzerland. And he told him about spiritual experiences. And then Roland Hazard somehow ended up in a courtroom where Ebbie Thatcher stood. And then Ebbie Thatcher took the message to Bill Wilson. And Bill Wilson met Dr. Bob. And those pioneers of Alcoholics Anonymous started this thing. And now it's all over the world. And, like, it's very moving to me. I met some people from, I'm from originally from Chennai in India, and I met a group of people at the zoo yesterday from Chennai. This thing is all over the world, and we're helping alcoholics, and we're moving in action. And I thank God that I've been given this opportunity that I don't deserve to get sober, because I've done some things that don't deserve to get the rewards that I've gotten in this program. But thank God that the higher power is one of mercy and not of justice. Thank you.
Thank you, Trinity. And here's Fred.
She said she tried not to over-prepare. I think I did over-prepare, but we'll go anyways. My name is Fred, and I am an alcoholic. My sobriety date is May 19th, 1988. My home group is Change or Die. We meet in the Malvern Center. We meet in the Malvern Center, Malvern, PA, 8 a.m. Saturday and Sunday mornings. You guys are all invited. Not all at the same time. Society in Action, it comes from a paragraph that I wanted to read from our serviceman. It's called AA's Legacy of Service by Bill. And he wrote this in 1951. Our 12-step, carrying the message, is the basic service that the AA Fellowship gives. This is our principal aim and the main reason for our existence. Therefore, AA is more than a set of principles, is a society of alcoholics in action. We must carry the message, else we ourselves can wither, and those who haven't been given the truth may die. Hence, an AA service is anything, whatever, that helps us to reach a fellow sufferer, ranging all the way from the 12-step itself to a 10-cent phone call and a cup of coffee. And to AA's General Service Office for National and International Action. The sum total of all these services is our third legacy of service. Services include meeting places, hospital cooperation, and intergroup offices. They mean pamphlets, books, and good publicity of almost every description. They call for committees, delegates, trustees, and conferences. And not to be forgotten, they need voluntary monetary contributions from within the fellowship. I'm from Area 59. I live outside of Philadelphia. And some of the history of AA in Philadelphia, the February 28th, 1940, a group of drunks gathered and decided to put on an AA meeting. So they started the first meeting in Philadelphia on March 6th, 1940. In April of 1940, only 1 month old, they carried a message to the Philadelphia Psychopathic Ward. In September, 6 months after that first meeting in Philadelphia, they took the first prison meeting into Corrections Institute. So the people who started AA in Philadelphia are great examples of being a society in action. I thought I would just like go through this paragraph and just talk a little bit about what it means to me. So I'll break it down a little bit. Our 12-step carrying the message is the basic service that the AA Fellowship gives that is our principal aim and main reason for existence. Therefore, AA is more than a set of principles. It is a society of alcoholics in action. We must carry the message, else we ourselves can wither, and those who haven't been given the truth may die. Now, just because we ourselves get sober does not mean we are done and we don't have more work to do. As it is often said, we must give it away to keep it. But I don't think all of our members truly understand this statement, and I think it sometimes causes our members to relapse. According to our membership survey pamphlet from 2011, 27% of our fellowship is sober less than a year. 29% are sober 1 to 5 years, 12% are sober 6 to 10, and 36% are sober more than 11 years. So what happens from that 1 to 5 years where we're sober 29% and that 6 to 10 years where it's 12%? Why the drop? I think some of it is our members are not really being part of the society in action. And I think sometimes we can mislead people when we say things like, meeting makers make it. I mean, I understand the intent behind that statement. Like, if we can get people to sit in meetings, just keep coming back to meetings, they can start to hear what other members who have long-term quality sobriety are doing. And then they can emulate it. But I think that sometimes meeting makers make it lead people to believe that all they have to do is attend meetings to stay sober, and they are more at AA than in AA. They are not involved in all aspects of the program. So I believe just attending meetings can get you dry for a short-term basis, but I believe so much more of the program is what we do between meetings, the reading of the literature, working with the steps, with the sponsor, step work and service, and, of course, practicing these principles in all our affairs. So if someone's just attending meetings, life gets better, and then sometimes other things in life start happening and take priority, and they drift away from meetings. And unfortunately, many relapse, and I think that's what happens with that 1 to 5, the 6 to 10, and the drop that occurs. By the way, while I am hesitant to talk about meeting makers make it, I do strongly believe in this statement. The problem with people who don't go to meetings is they're not around to hear about what happens to people who don't go to meetings. So I do think meetings are very important. And I've seen an example of this in my own life. I was sober about 3 years. I was attending many meetings, but I wasn't sharing in meetings. But I was dry, and life was getting better. But I was on the outskirts of AA. I'd worked the steps with a sponsor. I was attending meetings, but I wasn't really involved. And then a really wonderful thing happened for me. I was at a meeting of Paola Young People's. And after the meeting was over, a bunch of people got up and started walking out a side door. I don't know what was going on. And Jim B. turned around and said, Fred, are you coming? Sure. I mean, he invited me. I didn't know what was going on. But little did I know that at that point, I was standing at a turning point in my life. Because I walked through that doorway and I walked into a committee meeting for the Downingtown Young People's Conference of AA. That was my first service commitment. So I got kind of tricked in my first commitment. I'm sure that didn't happen to anybody else here. But I came out of that meeting with a service commitment. And one of the first committee meetings, I found myself standing around a table, long table, a bunch of us there, and we were stuffing three registration forms into an envelope. Why three? Because that's what the postage covered. And we stood there for an hour just stuffing envelopes, and an amazing thing happened for me. I started talking to the other people around the table. And I got to know them a little bit, and they got to know me a little bit. And I got the chance to be a part of the committee. And it was really, for me, the chance to become part of the Society of Alcoholics in Action. I was on the program committee and attending the committee meetings. I got to see the whole process of the conference growing. And again, this helped me to feel part of the conference and of AA. And I started feeling better about myself. And it didn't really click in my brain, but years later I heard Jay Gary, past trustee, say this at a meeting. He said, if you have low self-esteem, do esteemable acts. And I think that's something that was happening for me. Getting involved in the conference, I started feeling better about myself. And at the end of the conference, when all those people left the conference and I could watch the people walking out with all that energy, the people on the committee and I could stand back and go like, yeah, we were part of that. And what ended up happening is by the time the conference was over, I was in AA. I was no longer at AA. And I believe that really turned out to be a lifesaver. Shortly after that conference, I lost my job. I just bought a new car. It broke down. I borrowed a car from a friend of mine. The front tire fell off. And then in the morning, my alarm went off. My first wife came in the room and said, Fred, I want a divorce. I mean, it was just bang, bang, bang. And I was crushed. But again, I was at a turning point, and I was really fortunate. I did not turn for the bottle. I turned for the phone. And who did I call? I called those people from the Downingtown Young People's Conference Committee. I sometimes wonder what would have happened to me if at that Paola Young People's meeting, Jim hadn't turned around and said, Fred, are you coming? Or if I had said no. When all this stuff hit the fan in my life, would I have still turned to the phone or would I have turned to the bottle? And if I had turned to the phone and when I called people, would they have even known who I was? I'm sure they would have tried to talk to me and tried to help me, but they would not have known me and might not have been able to help me the same way that they did since we were on a committee together. So for me, without that service commitment, without being part of a Society of Alcoholics in Action, I believe I would have been one of those who disappeared from that 1 to 5 years to that 6 to 10 years. I would have been one of those, as it says in this paragraph, who can wither. Another way of putting it is by being an alcoholic in action, I got 12-stepped, proving to me that by giving away a little, I got so much in return. I've since had been blessed with opportunities to be involved in area service in Area 59 and an intergroup service in the Southeastern Pennsylvania Intergroup Association, along with my home group and 12-step calls, and it's all served to strengthen my sobriety. And the side benefit is I have so many friends now in so many different parts of the country. You know, the pretty cool thing, I was talking about the Downingtown Young People's Conference. Now, I got involved with that in the early to mid-90s. I'm looking around. There's like 5 or 6 people in this room here today who I know from there, who are still sober, still active in AA. And over the last 2 days, I've bumped into 2 other people that are also from that committee. I probably bump into 10 to 15 a year from the 90s to now that are still sober. I think it's pretty amazing. Next paragraph here. Hence, an AA service is anything, whatever, that helps us reach a fellow sufferer, ranging all the way from the 12-step itself to a 10-cent phone call and a cup of coffee. Oftentimes, when we think of service, we think of titles. Intergroup rep, GSR, steering committee, DCM, chair, treasurer, secretary, etc. But one doesn't need a title to do 12-step work. A couple of years ago at the Area 59 Eastern PA Convention, there was a great workshop called Service Without a Title. And a few examples of things that came up. And I'm sure these are things that everybody does, but talking to a newcomer before the meeting or after the meeting. There's a guy in my home group who, when it's a newcomer, he goes up and not only gives them his phone number, he gets their phone number, and in a day or two, he calls them. You know, and it's not just newcomers. After a meeting, talk to a struggling old-timer. You know, just because we get some time doesn't mean that life is easy. Some of us run into problems. We still need help as time goes on. Next time you go to a doctor or to the dentist, take some pamphlets with you. Say, hey, I'm an alcoholic. Here's some meeting schedules for you, the 20 questions. AA members and other medications is great pamphlets for them. The clergy, there are pamphlets for. Another thing you can do, I've heard it said that the Big Book is the number one stolen book from libraries. Think about it. If you were drinking and you went to a library, would you really check the book out? I'd have stolen it. So, hey, next time you're at the library, look to see if they have a Big Book, or just take a new Big Book and just throw it in the book return. That's an example of a 12-step work. Give someone a ride to a meeting, or ask someone for a ride to a meeting. Maybe when you ask someone to take a ride to a meeting, they go and they hear something they really needed to hear, and they wouldn't have gone if you hadn't asked them for a ride. Call someone, or another big one is actually answer the phone when somebody calls. A while ago, I was driving through a town where I used to drink, and I drove past the liquor store where I used to buy my booze, and I looked over, and they'd repainted it, and it looked really nice. And I found myself thinking to myself, I wonder what the inside looks like now. My phone rang. It was a newcomer looking for just someone to reach out to. You know, that phone call, I answered the phone, but that newcomer was the one who did 12-step work that day. It wasn't me. Some other examples from AA Comes of Age, page 140. When Ebby heard how serious Bill's drinking was, he resolved to visit him. He was in New York and Bill was in Brooklyn. His resolve was not enough. He had to take action and he had to spend money. He called Bill on the phone and got into the subway. Right then and there, Ebby established the principle that AA in action calls for the sacrifice of much time and a little money. From a letter in 1959, Bill wrote, "Gratitude should go forward rather than backwards. In other words, if you carry the message to still others, you'll be making the best possible repayment for the help given you." And from the 12 and 12, page 110 in the 12 step, "No satisfaction has been deeper, no joy greater than a 12-step job well done. To watch the eyes of men and women open with wonder as they move from the darkness into light, to see their lives quickly fill with new purpose and meaning, and above all, to watch them awaken to the presence of a loving God in their lives. These are the substance of what we receive as we carry AA's message. To me, all of this is part of being a society of alcoholics in action." Next part here talks about the AA's General Service Office doing service for national and international action. The sum total of these services is our third step legacy. Services include meeting places, hospital cooperation, and intergroup offices. They mean pamphlets, books, and good publicity of almost every description. They call for committees, delegates, trustees, and conferences. We need to organize our overall 12-step work. In a letter from 1954, Bill wrote, "AA services, all designed to make more and better 12-step work possible, are the works that ensure our life and growth by preventing anarchy or stagnation." And he also wrote, "The idea of 24-hour living applies primarily to the emotional life of the individual, but I've never been able to see what this means the individual, the group, or AA as a whole should give no thought whatever to how to function tomorrow or even in the more distant future. Faith alone never constructed the house you live in. There had to be a blueprint and a lot of work to bring that into reality. So in addition to the individual 12-step and service work, we need to be organized on a large scale." So committees in both general service, be it at the district, area, or national level, and committees and intergroups coordinate meetings in treatment facilities, hospitals, and prisons. They answer the phones for people looking for help for themselves or for loved ones or, yeah, my friend who needs help, or an out-of-town member looking for a meeting. They accompany medical students, doctors, police, judges, other professionals to open meetings, attend health fairs, put up websites, meeting directories to help people find meetings. General Service works to gather the experience, strength, and hope from members all across the country, putting together these pamphlets, videos, newsletters, literature of all kinds of topics for professionals, for young people, for public information, some meant for AA members, and some meant for the outside world, to handle the business of day-to-day AA and all the things that individual groups would not be able to do on their own. Sometimes people ask, what's the difference between intergroups and General Service? Both branches work to carry the message in ways that individual members and groups cannot. Intergroups usually cover smaller regions compared to the country as a whole. In the Philadelphia area, the intergroup is made up of the five counties surrounding Philadelphia in southeastern PA. In forming intergroups, groups get together to better carry the message, and intergroups often cover the last mile of AA service, the actual face-to-face interaction. They are often those who coordinate the carrying of the message into treatment centers and facilities. They cover the local health fairs. They escort medical students, judges, etc., to the meetings. And they provide the phone list. General service includes districts, the area committee, and, of course, the General Service Conference and the General Service Office in the Grapevine. General service covers everywhere. If there aren't any local intergroups in parts of the area or district, then those people work to carry the message listed above. The districts are where each group's GSRs or general service reps go to participate. This gives each group in attendance a voice in the actions of AA as a whole. In Concept 1, we have the organizational chart of AA, which is called the upside-down triangle. And, of course, the highest position you can have in AA is actually sitting in a meeting. And do we have any GSRs in the room? Thank you all. You have voluntarily taken a demotion in AA. We thank you for that because you are the next step down in the triangle. But the GSRs are really important. They're the connection from their group to AA as a whole. And while many areas handle their structure slightly differently, in Area 59, the GSRs carry their group conscience to the district and the information back from the district. From the district, the DCM takes the information from the district to the area committee, which is made up of the other DCMs, the area officers, to include the delegate, and then brings the information back to the district. And then, of course, the delegate takes that information and group conscience to the General Service Conference, where all the delegates from across the country participate, along with the directors and AA staff of AA World Services, the Grapevine, along with our 14 alcoholic trustees and 7 non-alcoholic trustees. So some other things of what does the General Service Conference do, what kind of business is transacted at the conference. A quick tour through the advisory actions over the years reveal a wide range of collection of issues. Affirmations of the importance of anonymity and the actions delineating how anonymity may be applied in relations with the general public. Approval of various methods contributing to GSO and to other areas. Recommendations for increasing area contributions for the support of the annual conference meeting. Approval of new conference-approved literature and changes to literature already published. Solution to group issues such that is of family groups, special purpose groups, and groups meeting in treatment facilities. Recommendations concerning the composition and function of the General Service Board. Suggestions for displaying and selling AA literature in groups. Various recommendations concerning the content of the service manual and suggested practices in the service structure. Recommendations for the development of new literature, as well as films, videos, and audio cassettes to carry the message, along with many other things. And the last sentence is, and not to be forgotten, they need voluntary monetary contributions from within the fellowship. From the 12th concept and warranty 2, our attitude toward the giving of time compared with our attitude toward giving money represents an interesting contrast. We give a lot of our time to AA activities for our own protection and growth, but also for the sake of our groups, our areas, AA as a whole, and above all, the newcomer. Translated in terms of money, these collective sacrifices would add up to a huge sum. But when it comes to the actual spending of cash, particularly for AA service overhead, many of us are apt to turn a bit reluctant. This attitude quickly disappears when a real need for a given AA service becomes clear. Donors seldom see what the exact result has been. They well know, however, that countless thousands of other alcoholics and their families are being helped. So to paraphrase from the service manual from the paragraph, why do we need a conference? Why do we need to be a society of alcoholics in action? We need it to ensure the recovery of the alcoholic who still stumbles in the darkness, one short block from this room. We need it to ensure the recovery of a child being born tonight, destined for alcoholism. We need it to provide, in keeping with our 12th step, a permanent haven for all alcoholics who in the ages ahead can find an AA, that rebirth that brought us back to life. We need it to ensure that the doors of the halls of AA never have locks on them so that all people for all time who have an alcoholic problem may enter these halls unasked and feel welcome. We need it to ensure that Alcoholics Anonymous never asks of anyone who needs us what his or her race is, what his or her creed is, what his or her social position is. I am responsible when anyone, anywhere, reaches out for help. I want the hand of AA to always be there, and for that I'm responsible. But it takes all of us working together to make that a reality. Thank you all for your service.
Thank you, Fred. Yeah, when the GSO sent me the information for the chairing the meeting, they said that oftentimes, you know, some of the chairs share part of their stories between the speakers. And for me, when I've heard people do that, that's kind of disjointed, and I've never really enjoyed it. So I thought I would hope that they filled up the time, and that there wouldn't be too much time left over. But we do have a little bit, so I'll share a little bit of my story on how I, you know, this getting into action. You know, to me, I find it hard to say that I have been in action. To me, it's more that I participate in a lot of little activities, and somehow, some way, some power accumulates all that activity and transforms it into a spiritual action that really helps other people. And that the idea of being in spiritual action just is too much for my head to really grasp hold of. You know, I read the big book twice before I got to my first meeting. First time I read it, I thought it's a wonderful book. You know, it just had described me perfect, seemed like all the answers I needed. And a week later, when I read it again, I got into chapter 4 and I started seeing some of Bill's religious ideas in there, and I wanted to throw the book away. And I went on for 3-4 years. I would read chapters 1, 2, 3, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. I would not read chapter 4. Once in a while, I'd forget, and I'd hit that same paragraph again, and it just really angered me. And then I'd start reading. I'll read the first page. I'll read the last page. And okay, that. I'll read the first 2 pages. I'll read the last 2 pages. And then I hit it again, and just... And that. But it took 3-4 years for me listening to you people talk about this power greater than me before I was able to really try to come to an agreement that, okay. And for me, it was 10 years sober. I woke up a little bit after I was 10 years sober, and it just hit me that there really must be such a power. Why have I been sober for so long? And so I was a slow start in this program. It took me quite a while. You know, I remember the very first set of teeth that I met in this program. I was coming down the stairway in the church to the basement, and this big old set of teeth stuck out its hand and said, "Hi! You know, my name's Craig." And it was 2-3 weeks later, he asked me if I would... help clean up the ashtrays, you know, dump the ashtrays, wash them out for next week. And then, okay, yeah, I can do that. I was a smoker back then, so that was okay. And that's what my start was. And a couple months later, they asked me to make coffee. And then a couple months after that, they gave me the key. Will you open up? Okay, I can take a turn at that. And that's how I slowly got introduced to doing things for other people. It was about 6 months where I got our intergroup rep went out and got drunk, and so I got given that position. I thought, great, you know, yeah, I get to do something. And I'd go to the meetings, and I'd be all prepared to give the report, and they'd never wanted to hear it. You know, they had it, well, we'll close the meeting, and then you can give the report, but everybody stood up and is walking out of the room, and it just, okay. But I did my part. I went to the intergroup meetings, and I had a report to give. And just slowly through that, you know, I started to learn a little bit of responsibility and all. And slowly it started, that God idea started to get into my head a little bit. And when I finally was able to read that chapter 4, I saw there on page 47 where it says that I should not allow any prejudice I may have against spiritual terms keep me from asking myself what they mean to me. And so when I started doing that and asking what do these terms mean to me, came to the understanding they meant absolutely nothing, because I was doing absolutely nothing to demonstrate any kind of spiritual terms as I understood them at that time. And I remembered that Bill talked in several places in the book, how we're supposed to demonstrate these principles. And if I am demonstrating things, then you should be able to tell from what I do, what I think, and what I believe, and that. And so I started paying a little attention to what I was doing and how I was doing it. You know, how do I demonstrate love and tolerance of others? How do I demonstrate forgiveness? How do I demonstrate compassion and love? And that, and found, you know, I really had no idea. And I had to pay a little more attention to what you people were saying. And that, I went several years without any kind of really active sponsorship. And so it was a long time, excuse me, long time for me before I really made a whole lot of progress. But when I finally did get a sponsor that I was desperate enough to work with, and we started going through the steps, and I told him there that step two for me has always been true simply by definition, that if there's a power greater than me, that power can do whatever it wants to me. Otherwise, it's not a power greater than me. And he just looked at me and he said, "Charlie, you're so very, very wrong." He said, "God will never, ever do anything to you. God will only do things through you." And it took me another year or two before I understood what he meant by that, that if I want anything to change, if I have to do the things that allow change to occur. You know, it's, I can't change anything myself, but I can do things that will allow the change to occur. I had to start demonstrating a different way. And for me, that was really how I've gotten into action. You know, I was about 4 years sober, four and a half, somewhere in there, and it was coming up time for elections, and that same set of teeth nominated me for GSR at a meeting. And, okay. And I went to the district meeting, and it kind of amazed me. You know, there were about 20 people there. I didn't know half of them. And a whole different world. And then they took me out to the election assembly in November, and it's just, eesh. You know, it was a strange thing. You know, why do you vote so many times when you know who's going to win? Because they're only two votes short, and then they go to the hat, and the other person gets it, and it's just, what's going on? And but it all worked out. And it just is that, you know, I was there, and I was watching and listening, and I've been involved with the area service ever since. And it's been, I think I'm on my, what is it now, the 13th rotation, going to the area meetings. It's just been a godsend for me to allow me to expand AA and participate more and do more. And that when I did get this sponsor who I was willing to work with, and we went through the steps, that's when it suddenly seemed like somebody was asking me to sponsor them, and was able to take him through the steps, and it just, I don't know where he is now or if he's even still sober, but he sure helped me. And it was just these little things, do what's in front of me, you know, keep my side of the street clean, and somehow or another it seems to work. The action gets done. You know, it. I'm not, don't know exactly how that all gets accumulated up and becomes all that great, wonderful action that has all of you in this room today, but I'm very grateful that it does. And all I do are these little things that are right in front of me, and when I can do that, life goes very, very well. So I'm very, very grateful for you that you guys put up with me long enough for me to understand what you were talking about. You know, if I had tried to figure it out myself, I would have been way off track and gone a long time ago. So it's just been really a wonderful way of life. And I'm glad to be here. And thank you to all my brother and two sisters that I just met today. Well, I guess we are all sober. So you can join in with us and the family, too. And with that, I guess we can close. Let's close with the Serenity Prayer.